Tim Versalotti is director of the Western New England University Bowl, professor of political science, and a great guy. Tim, let's talk Massachusetts for a moment. Senator Warren, how does she come out of all this election stuff?
Well, she has built up some chits because she's gone around the country. She's campaigned for candidates. She's raised money for candidates. She was one of the chief attackers, if you will, of Donald Trump, a role that usually falls to the party's vice presidential nominee. And she has solidified her role as one of the leaders of the progressive wing of the party, along with Bernie Sanders. And so, although the presidential election did not go the direction she would have liked, in terms of within the party, her influence continues to be very strong.
Is she a potential vice presidential or presidential candidate in the future?
It's a good question. The morning after the election, I was reading my Twitter feed, and someone had tweeted, "Paging Elizabeth Warren, book your first flight to Des Moines," meaning start working on the Iowa caucus for 2020. It begs a couple of questions, though. One, she's up for re-election in 2018, which doesn't seem like an issue that's going to be very problematic for her, given her standing in Massachusetts. But two, the larger issue is she's 67, and so she is not as if you're trying to create the future of the party, the face of the party, it's hard to do that with someone in advanced years. That the age issue became significant in the presidential campaign this year. It would seem to me that she has decided she's more effective in the Senate and does not have White House ambitions, and with good reason.
Let's talk, Tim Versalotti, about some of the ballot questions in Massachusetts. There were two of particular interest, and I think the pollsters largely got them right. The first of them had to do with getting high pot, and that passed overwhelmingly. And the second that was interesting to me was the charter school issue. Maybe you could talk about both of those for us.
Sure. Yeah, this is the third presidential election cycle in a row when Massachusetts voters have voted to loosen restrictions on marijuana. In 2008, it was decriminalizing possession of small amounts. In 2012, it was approving medical marijuana. And now in 2016, legalizing marijuana for use by adults ages 21 and older. The demographics of that question in our polling were very interesting. No surprise, young people tended to favor legalization in much, much higher numbers, approaching upwards of 80% for likely voters ages 18 to 39. And then, of course, that support diminished as voters got older. We also saw a bit of a gender split. Men were more likely than women to support it. But this was interesting. The vote no on four campaign advertising really focused on families and the potential threat to children from legalizing marijuana. And so one would expect that parents of children 18 or under would be more likely to oppose legalization, and we did not find that in our polling. We found no statistically significant difference between people who had minor children and people who did not. Age seemed to be much more of a factor driving people as to whether they supported this or not.
Now, interestingly, Tim Versalotti, some heavy hitters in Massachusetts were dead set against it, but it didn't seem to matter.
That's right. And part of that is you'll find that public officials are more influential on an issue where people do not have fully formed or fairly fixed attitudes. But a question like marijuana legalization, which four other states have already done, it's an issue that people have been thinking about and have thought about in a hypothetical way up until this year. It's not something new or highly technical where you might look to an opinion leader, an elected official, or some other prominent individual for guidance. I think opinions on this were fairly well formed even before we got into this election cycle.
And yet when even the experts, Dr. Jennifer Michaels, who's generally regarded as, you know, one of the major leaders in addiction psychiatry, she said, well, you know, it's a gateway drug. Nobody seemed to listen.
No, and we can only speculate at this point because no exit poll was done in Massachusetts as to why people didn't listen. It may be that there is enough of a perception that this is no different from alcohol. It may be that individuals thinking back to their own youthful days or maybe even the present say, well, this is something that an individual can use without falling into dire circumstances. There could be any number of factors that prompted people to reject that argument.
Okay, so we got about 3 minutes to talk about charter schools right now. That's a very contentious one. There are many people who thought that charter schools were a good thing because it gave kids in bad schools, for want of a better word, a chance to go to have a same choice that a rich kid might do in a private school. Nevertheless, it went down. How come?
This was a fascinating political issue to watch. Money poured into Massachusetts, $33 million on TV ads and direct mail. The bulk of that, about $19 million, on the pro-charter school side, and the balance coming from teachers unions, not just in Massachusetts but across the country.
Well, why were they so concerned? Because the charter schools are not unionized?
That's part of it, that they're not unionized, and also there is this debate over whether the money that follows a student from a public school to a charter school gets made up or not. And so the central argument was, do charter schools siphon scarce resources from public schools? And we saw some evidence on both sides of that argument. We also saw a debate over, do charter schools poach the best students? Are they also taking on the students who are more expensive to educate, such as students with special needs? The way this question ended up being framed for the public was one of a zero sum. And so even though it really applied primarily to urban school districts in Boston and Springfield and Lowell, you had suburban voters around the state voting against it out of a perception, real or mistaken, that raising the cap would somehow take resources away from their schools and away from their children. So the way the issue was framed, I think, played a significant role, not just in bringing about the defeat of the question, but by the margin that it failed, by 24 percentage points.
I must say, however, even though you're quite right that the big advantage would be for children in urban districts who really have no access to a different kind of school, it doesn't stop people from, in places like Great Barrington, which has one of the best school systems you'll ever see, you know, saying some guy wakes up one morning and says, I want a charter school.
Oh, no doubt. And in the Pioneer Valley as well, in some of the more affluent communities up and down the valley, you do have charter schools as well. And there have been surveys that have shown that children attending those schools are not coming from low-income backgrounds, that they're actually coming from middle-class households.
It's always wonderful to talk to our pal, Tim Versalotti, director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science. I can't imagine how you work as hard as you do and get that poll out all the time, Tim, and teach all of those classes, but we're very lucky that whatever time you have, you give some of it to us, and thank you so much,
Tim. Time well spent. Thank you, Alan.